Welcome to Whiskey Wednesdays, where we drink the finest whiskeys and argue about the internet's most important topics.
Because if there's nothing that the internet doesn't love more, it's arguing and telling people that they're wrong.
That's right. With each topic, we pick a side. Even if we don't really agree to that side, we're going to argue this thing, and we're going to die on this hill.
So grab a whiskey and sit back and enjoy. If you're listening to us on the podcast, thank you so much for listening. We would love if you would hit the subscribe button. And please, after you listen to this and you like it, please leave us a review. We would absolutely love to get a five-star review. That really helps us get found. And as a brand new podcast, the only way that people are going to find us, besides us posting about it, is you guys helping us out by hitting that subscribe and giving us a comment.
Also, I just genuinely want to know if they like it or not. Because we put the stuff out, we really have no feedback on it.
That's true. If you really like it, leave us a five-star review. If you don't like it, send us an email.
To
dustyb@theneomag.com.
Don't you dare.
Let us know that.
Don't you email me.
You can watch this on our YouTube channel. If you search Neomag USA, you'll find us on YouTube and you can actually watch this. And you'll see a few more things. You'll see some illustrations. You'll see the bourbon. You'll see some of the things we talk about. Even though we try to do our best to make this listenable as a podcast. So thank you guys so much. Let's get to our topic for today. I bought us something.
What'd you get us?
I bought us some glasses from Last Cut Crystal.
Oh, yeah.
So if you remember, we met Aaron, the guy that makes these at the OG ORD.
ORD, yeah.
It was Ohio Range Day. We met Aaron a long time ago. He started doing hand-cut crystal glasses, and they're amazing. I'm going to try to put up some B-roll so you guys can see some of the things that he's doing here. Check these things out. Open them up. His packaging is phenomenal. For one, I know that this has nothing to do with the glasses. He uses a magnet.
I like magnets.
Which, if you know Neomeg,
we're suckers for magnets.
We like magnets. But check this out.
This is how it comes, then.
Yeah, so this is how it comes.
That's cool.
Yes, there's a sticker in there.
Oh, these are awesome. These are really ornate. So they have this, what we're calling this? This... serpentine?
Yeah.
So it's two differently textured lines across this glass.
Yeah,
it's
so
beautiful.
When I talk to him, this is one of the things, if you know me, I'm fanatical about handmade things.
Yeah.
I love custom handmade things. And when you watch the videos of Aaron making these, I mean, he's sitting there, every single one of these marks and cuts, he is hand doing on a wheel and then polishing, and
that's gorgeous.
I had him do the Neomag logo in the bottom of the glass.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, I like this champ. I don't know what to call these, facets on the bottom of the glass.
Yeah.
So when it sits there, that's pretty.
Yeah. So these are beautiful, and it's just, I figure if we're gonna do this every week, we should get something nice. So thank you, Aaron, for making these. They're amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I know what I was going to say. One of the things I love about handmade things is I look through his designs. Every design is beautiful.
Yeah.
Everything from very simple to, he has one that's a cabin scene and trees and stuff like that.
I don't think I've seen that
one. But I told Aaron, I'm like, Aaron, I like custom things, and if I'm going to have you custom make something, do something original for me. So this design on these glasses, he's never done before.
I love this design.
And we're talking about maybe doing a Neomag Whiskey Wednesday glass, and maybe...
Oh, that would be really cool.
Yes, maybe if you guys are interested, go check out, he has an Etsy, Alaska Crystal Etsy. And again, I paid for these, we're not, I'm giving him a shout out because he does awesome work, and we know him, and he's a good guy. So, we're going to be pouring into...
These glasses are sweet, dude.
All right, so today we're going to be drinking a New Riff single barrel. This is a stiff drink. This is 112.8, almost 113 proof.
Wow.
So 56.4 alcohol by volume. And this is a single barrel. So I'll tell you real quick.
Oh, do you guys hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Glug, 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 glug.
A single barrel. I don't know if we've talked about it. I think we might have talked about this with the Blantons.
No, hold on.
So real quick, a single barrel is aged in one barrel, and then they empty that barrel into bottles. There's no mixing, which is how most bourbons and whiskeys are made. They make a bunch of barrels, mix them together to get a flavor profile. So the cool thing about, and with custom glasses like this. Yeah. This is almost a custom bottle of bourbon because every barrel is going to have a little bit different flavor profile than the next. So you could go buy another bottle of this, and as long as it's from a different barrel, it might have a little bit of a different
flavor. That's very cool. Flavor. So it has, does it have the barrel number on it somewhere?
Yeah, let's see, they have.
Where'd you find that? Proof?
Oh, I thought, that's here it is.
Probably, right?
Oh, barrel number 6509.
Wow.
Distilled on 10/31/17, it's from 2017. That's barreled cool. on 11/19/21.
That's so fascinating.
So just a little history. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot of history about New Riff because they are a fairly new company. They were established in 2014.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not even 10 years old yet.
No.
And I've actually been to this distillery. I was in Kentucky for a wedding this last summer, and New Riff was nearby, so we stopped. It was a beautiful place. The mission statement says this, our mission is simple, to someday be counted among the world's great small distilleries. Becoming one of the great small distilleries of the world is a long-term play with no exact ring to win or title to be declared. So they are new guys to a very old,
profession, really.
Yeah, a very old tradition and profession. So one of the things that makes New Rift distinct is that all of their bourbons are what's called bottled in bond.
Okay, what's that?
All right, so
I don't really know anything about that.
We're gonna go back in time a little bit to the year 1897. This is when bottled in bond became a thing. And the reason bottled in bond became a thing. Let me start with that. Before 1897, people who were making bourbon, there was no control. There was no. It was just anybody could make bourbon, and you could just buy it, and the problem was, and we see this not just in this industry, but in a lot of industries, is that to compete, people were trying to make more, and they were trying to cut costs, and they were cutting, they were actually adding things.
Mm.
To it to give it better color. They're adding things like formaldehyde to get certain flavors and things.
Gotcha.
So they were making the quickest, worst bourbon they could, and then they were adding things to it to try to make it and smell, look, taste,
right. Yeah.
Taste better. The problem is there were people that were dying because of this. You know, you can only drink so much
formaldehyde. Yeah,
before you're gonna die.
Yeah.
And so the legit whiskey makers were upset because they are actually trying to hone their craft, make some of the best things that they can.
Yeah.
And there's these other people that are giving them a bad name because people are getting, they're afraid. You know, how do I know who to buy whiskey from that I'm not going to die?
Right.
So the whiskey makers actually worked with the federal government to create the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897.
That is fascinating.
Right, so what they did, and in turn, the government gave tax incentives.
There
to,
it is.
To companies.
Okay.
To do bottled and bond, because what this basically did is this allowed the government to come in and give some control, and more oversight than control.
Okay. So
here are the things that makes bottled and bond special. And as I say these things, you can imagine that these things don't necessarily happen with non-bottled and bond. So I'll let you kind of do the reverse math here. So there is no blending, which means it's composed of the same types of spirits made from the class of materials. So like bonded whiskey can't be mixed with sugarcane, or it can't be mixed with rye whiskey or okay. corn whiskey. It has to be the same thing, you
right.
can't mix. Has to be made in the same season, and a season is either January to June or July to December. And it has to be made by the same producer at the same distillery.
So you can't take last year's product and put it with this year's?
Correct.
Okay.
There's a minimum age that must be stored for at least 4 years in wooden containers or
bottles. So there's this minimum one, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, they did five, so. Yep. Okay.
So there's a minimum age. No
four.
Flavoring.
Yeah, four.
They can't add anything outside of... Yeah, they can't add anything outside of water to cut the proof.
Got
which
it.
Then one of the next things is it must be bottled at least 100 proof.
Okay.
If it's any less, no good.
No good.
And so finally, on top of all the physical requirements, the bottle must state the producer and distiller's name, where it was produced, as well as a bottling location. And so what they did is they actually gave the warehouses where these things are stored have government oversight. There are strict rules, like the things I went through here. I'm sure there's other things and where the government gets some oversight into the process. So if you are a whiskey drinker or bourbon drinker or whatever, when you see a bottled and bond on the bottle, you know that it is a pure, clean thing. And that's one of the things that bourbon manufacturers like about bottle and bond, there is kind of a rift between, some distillers don't like the bottle and bond thing, and some do. And the reason that a lot do like bottle and bond is because it means that you are drinking exactly what is coming
right.
out of the barrel,
yeah.
right? And so you can't, it proves the distiller's skills.
Yes.
There's no making up by mixing things in with or anything like that, or taking last year's great stuff and mixing it with this year's good stuff and
okay.
making something,
Yeah.
It just, you know that what you're drinking is what the distiller actually made and actually barreled and actually bottled. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah, so there you go. That's it's a little bit about New Riff and a little bit more about bottled and bond and what that means. So if you're kind of new to whiskey bourbon and you see bottled and bond and you want to know what that means, there you go.
That's fascinating. I knew none of that.
So the reason I picked, because again, I try to pick a bottle that has to do with what we're talking about today. So today we're going to be talking about Red Dot versus Iron Sight.
Okay.
Red Dots are kind of the new rift.
Oh, I see.
In handgun.
I see what
sighting
you did here.
Optics, whatever. So there's my tie-in.
It's a new option, yeah.
But we've actually not tasted this yet.
Are we moving on?
We've been talking about. Well,
I want to taste it. All right. It smells.
Ooh, that burns.
It smells good. It smells like alcohol.
The flavor is amazing, but you can tell it's 113 proof.
Ooh.
Ooh.
It's higher proof. Ooh.
It is delicious.
So I would say.
But it definitely know it's there.
And what's the flavor profile supposed to be?
We just opened this bottle. So again, a neck pour that's going to be a little bit stronger.
Woo.
Notes: deep, complex aromas of burnt sugar, clove, and stone fruits that open into layered, balanced flavors of caramelized wood sugars, charred oak, and confected rye spice.
I can taste the burnt. I can smell the burnt sugars. I can that charred oak comes through for me.
I bet this is one where if you threw a couple ice cubes in, mm-hmm. as it kind of got watered down a little bit, would smooth out and would actually bring out some of those.
This is one I would definitely
some
drink.
Those flavors, yes,
with cubes, not like.
Seems like it over 100 proof. I mean, I'm fine drinking it neat.
Yeah.
But it seems like I get over 100 proof. A lot of times what I'll do is my first couple sips, I'll drink completely neat.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'll add a couple cubes and just kind of experience the other flavors that open up as
gotcha.
as it waters down.
So I like this. There's not much on the aftertaste except for oak.
Yeah, it's very oaky.
And then also the tingle that is alcohol in your mouth when you can feel it kind of evaporating on your breath. This one has a strong notion of that.
I'm not sure I could tell you what a caramelized wood sugar is. So I'm not sure if I know if I taste it. I mean, I could put those three words together.
I don't taste caramel.
And come up with something.
I taste a lot of wood.
I definitely taste sweetness to it. And that's the corn in it.
Maybe that's also what they're kind of talking about, that like oaky, sweet I don't know. That's. I would say this is a good whiskey. My personal scale, like, you know, 1 to 10, 5 being an average whiskey, I would say I would give it a 5.5, okay. In my opinion, compared to the other ones we've tasted.
Yeah.
That's my...
I like it more than that.
Okay.
I drink whiskey more than you, so I'm used to the higher proof. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think maybe the thing that's holding you back is the higher proof to it, maybe.
I don't dislike
if
the higher
proof. If it wasn't burned.
I just don't think that there's a lot of oaky taste flavor to it, but it's not... I don't know, it's good. It's not like mind-blowing to me, yep. But it's not like the worst. Like, it's not below 5, it's just...
It is, yeah. I do tend, if I'm going to make a mixed drink, I tend to really... I save my higher proof whiskeys and bourbons for a mixed drink because I want to taste it come through.
This would make a killer old fashioned.
Yeah.
Because of the flavor that it has.
Yeah, an old fashioned or a Manhattan would be really good with it. And again,
yes.
Next time we open this bottle, it's gonna taste different.
Okay.
Because it is
a little
brand
bit
new bottle.
A little bit different. Yeah. Well. Now, right. I suppose we should get into.
So let's get into our topic for today. So we're going to be discussing Red Dot versus Iron Sight. I am arguing for Red Dot,
and I am arguing for Iron Sights.
Yeah. So.
I'm ironing.
Who started last time? I think maybe you.
Maybe you go ahead. Okay. I'll give you the.
All right. So, I'm just going to give you a half a second. Of Red Dot history here. I try to dig back and figure out when did Red Dot optics on handguns begin. And I couldn't find a ton. The one thing I did find, because I think when everybody thinks of a Red Dot on a pistol, it is the Kleenex brand to tissue is Trijicon. RMR.
Yep.
To Red Dots. So, looking at their history on their website, the first Trijicon RMR, or I'm not sure if it was called that then, but was 2007.
2007?
Yep.
Smack dab in the strong point of the G-Watt, right?
Yeah, so it was not all that long ago. I know.
No.
With how old you are, that was like a half, you know, half your lifetime ago.
Yeah, I was in seventh grade. That makes someone feel old. Hopefully it does.
Was years into my career. So I graduated high school in 2000. So that's how much older I am than you.
I was learning geometry, and you were learning that work.
Which, fun fact, tomorrow's my 40th birthday.
What?
Fun fact.
That is a fun fact.
Isn't that crazy? All right, so anyway.
40th. Something special.
So we're talking mid-2000s is when they first came out, and probably really started becoming popular. Obviously, it probably didn't become popular, you know.
Couldn't have.
Off the bat.
Yeah.
So, I want to say my first Red Dot was probably 5 years ago.
Okay.
So it would have been.
Yeah. Actually, I think
late 2010s. It's probably just because I started Neo Mag in 2015. I think I built my first pistol Red Dot gun in maybe. 17 or something.
That
like
sounds
that.
Right, because you had one when I started here.
So 10 years after the first Red Dot was put out by Trijicon.
That's fascinating, yeah.
I put the first thing, and they'd been out for a little while.
I remember the first time I saw one, I thought it was impossible.
Yeah, I remember the first time I picked one up on a handgun. It just, I'm sitting there trying to, it took me forever to try to find the Red Dot, and that was.
Yeah,
and honestly, it was probably a year or two after that before I built my first handgun with the Red Dot, and I did that because I did understand the benefits. So I'm just going to real quick go through the benefits of putting a Red Dot on a pistol. There are four main benefits. First is faster target acquisition.
Okay.
Second is target focus, being target focused instead of front sight focused. Honestly, that was probably the main reason why I built my first Red Dot and got into it. More precise aiming. You're putting what's potentially a couple MOA tiny Red Dot onto a target. It makes shooting at distance way easier than
once you're used to it. Yeah.
Than an iron sight. And the last thing is, and I know one of your cons is probably going to maybe be the same thing, but an illuminated dot in low light, and I'm gonna make a caveat with a weapon mounted light, is a dream. It is awesome. It's you aren't
with the weapon mounted light. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, low light, more precise, target focus, faster acquisition, are my main reasons.
Yeah. So, and I think red dot technology has improved vastly over the years. Had we had this conversation when you first got yours, I remember talking with people about being frustrated that they washed out in the daylight. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
When we first got into red dot technology, things would just like, you go out in the day and you had a little tiny dot you could barely see. And that technology has improved greatly. So, yeah.
We're gonna get a little more into the technology a little later.
Yeah, many people have made the argument that way. And I think that that's no longer an argument anymore.
Yep.
So I'm gonna go ahead and give you guys a few things that I think are pros for iron sights over red dots. I've, for many years, only shot with iron sights because, frankly, red dots were expensive, which isn't even on my cons list for the red dots, but they are expensive. So, and it's also changing as technology improves. So, iron sights are the universal aiming system of all guns, right? Everyone understands the concept that shoots of two back posts, one center post, align them, level them, squeeze the trigger. So I think having iron sights on a gun means that more people can utilize that gun function free. And whether or not you're carrying with it and it's your only carry or you're handing it to your aunt, you can explain the principle of aligning all those things up. Whether or not they hit the target is beyond them, but the principle is easy to explain and it's repeatable and it's easy to pick up. Red dots require more practice to find the dot every time you present. So I think that's a benefit. Also, iron sights never use batteries or power of any sort. So you don't have to rely on that. They just always work. Okay, they're tough, they're slim, never washes out whenever you've got a flashlight, like low light. You put that flashlight up by your face or out here or wherever and it hits, the splash off hits. You can wash out your light, it can happen. And it's happened to me before, even on a modern day red dot. You never lose the dot. I've talked about this, right? Put iron sights up, there's a little bit of wiggle, but it's never like present and then you have to default to your iron sights because you don't see the dot. And you never have to make that transition, you just always correct it. And then we kind of talked about this earlier. Never forget to turn on your iron sight, / there's no shake to wake to fail. You don't have to worry about any of the technology in it failing because iron sights have no technology beyond physical, mechanical properties. And then I think my last point, which is arguably, I think, the most important, is iron sights won two world wars, Greg. And if they can win two world wars, it's good enough for me. That's what I got to say about that.
Giving you a glare.
Why? It's true.
That is ridiculous.
No, it's two world wars.
Do we want to go back to all the old technology that won wars before and say that it's better because it was
effective
used
effective before? It's effective now.
We should go back to muskets because they won wars too.
They did, but not both world
and
wars.
Bow and arrows have won wars and killed people. And you already used that argument for 45, so
it's still a great argument.
You only get to use that once. I do want to add one more thing that I was thinking about as you were talking. Pro for red dot. It's people with poor eyesight. Especially, was it nearsighted when you can't see things near? I can never remember which way that goes.
So it is what you say. So if I'm farsighted, it means I can see stuff far, but I can't see stuff near.
Okay, so it's farsighted. If you're farsighted, trying to focus on a tiny little red dot or a tiny little front sight a couple feet from your face and still line it up with your target is very difficult for people that are, I think, farsighted. I think that's right.
Okay.
So a red dot, because you stay focused on what's on your target, and your red dot you don't focus on, it's better for. I know people who switch to red dot because of eyesight issues and something. Yeah. So I do know people that have switched to red dot because their eyes did not allow them to use iron sights.
That's interesting.
So,
yeah.
So there is a medical aspect potentially to this conversation as well for red dot. So I guess what's some of your, so why should somebody not put a red dot.
Yeah. So
on the, like I can't think of a reason why you shouldn't just have a red dot on all your handguns.
I can absolutely. So the first thing is, if you're a new shooter, you shouldn't even look at a red dot. Iron sights are what you need to put on your gun. I'm aware that they may be better at target acquisition and all this other stuff, but I think your fundamentals.
What you're saying is
come before.
I'm aware that putting a red dot on could make you a good shooter, but instead we're going to make you a bad shooter.
It's just like automatic transmissions are faster at shifting than manual transmissions.
There's a reason why
But new drivers should always get a manual as their first car.
I don't think that's true at all.
It is absolutely true.
That is terrifying. To have a new driver that already barely knows how to drive a car to now have to think about a clutch and shifting and all those things.
People did that for like probably 60 years.
And you could probably go back and see how much safer. That's one of the reasons why driving is safer. I'm not going to get into, you know, manual here. I'm actually going to add that to our
list because I really disagree. But my point is, when you learn with very simple devices, you are able to identify the problems in yourself, right? And then you're able to correct those instead of relying on technology to alter the fundamentals of shooting. So having iron sights, right, allows you to see in the middle of pressing that trigger when you're dipping in front of your target. When you have a window and a dot, you can't see what's happening.
What are you talking about? You see a red dot move if you're jerking the trigger.
You do, but you don't see what's happening here. You just see it go off target.
Well, a new shooter doesn't know how to fix any of that stuff anyway.
They need to learn it. That's the whole point.
So I will agree that every shooter should learn how to shoot with iron sights. Because to your point, every handgun out there has iron sights on it, so you should know how to shoot them. But the other side of it is, it's not like handguns with red dots don't still have iron sights.
They absolutely do.
So put a red dot on.
But it's easy to become reliant on that.
And then you can turn your red dot off and shoot irons. I don't know why you would, because there's a reason technology exists, because it's better.
Well, you just spent $600 on your brand new red dot. You're not going to turn that off.
No, ever.
So your expensive prop that goes on top of the gun, because you don't have it on, it's not something you're going to want to do when you bought a brand new gun.
And I agree. Like I said, you should be able to shoot irons. I don't know if I can anymore, because I can't think of the last time that I shot irons.
Case in point.
Because technology is the reason why I don't ride a horse to work.
But because let's say your red dot turns off and fails because you cracked a glass while you're rolling around in gravel and you can no longer use it. Guess what? You can immediately go back to using your iron sights, because for the first 5-6 years of shooting, you use iron sights and you got that riding the bike memory of shooting. That's what I think, man.
I will agree that everybody should learn how to shoot irons, but I think, again, you can put a red dot on all your guns and still shoot irons if you want to go back to the Stone Age.
Of
shooting irons. All right, so there's a few other things that you said that I think are bull.
Okay.
And that have come a long way is the durability.
Okay.
Red dots nowadays, I've actually...
Maybe the RMR.
I can say this. I have seen, in classes we've taken, I've seen more front sights come off than red dots go down.
No. I've seen 4 or 5 red dots go down.
I honestly can't think
of
any...
I've never seen a sight go down.
I think at one ORD I saw a guy's red dot come loose. It came off. But other than that, I don't know that of all the classes we've taken, I've ever seen red dots come off. I can think of a lot of classes where somebody comes asking me if I have a Glock front sight driver.
It's because they didn't put their Glock front sight on correctly.
It's because Glock doesn't put the front sights on correctly.
Well, you should immediately, by the way, just so you know, when you get a Glock, the first thing that you do, before you even like shoot your first round, is you just take both sights off and put the correct sights on.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah, no, yeah. Night sights.
No, yeah. I do agree. Put,
yeah.
Or just don't buy a Glock.
Actually, that's probably a good point too. They work, but
that's when we're gonna get.
Yeah. So does Toyota Corolla, but you'll never catch me dead in one.
The Glock fanboys are gonna come out.
Oh man, we're gonna get like ostracized by the Glock community.
And yet, I guarantee if you look at all their Glocks, none of them own. I know. Completely stock.
No.
Stock Glock. No.
It's the perfection, but let's change all the things about it.
There's a reason why they have the biggest aftermarket.
Yeah.
Because they need the most aftermarket.
That's like Honda Civic, people saying Honda Civics are a car perfection. But once again, they work for a very long time, but they're not the best car. If you want to make them fast, you got to put stuff to them. You want to make them off-roady, you got to put stuff to them.
And if we're going to talk about durability, red dots these days, I mean, and the RMR is one of the most. If while you're on YouTube, you know, Google the RMR torture tests, and it's insane the torture that those things can take.
The SRO, I've definitely seen crack.
Well, it's not meant to be a duty.
Yeah, the Delta Point Pro, I'm pretty sure, is made of a single pane of glass.
Yeah, it's not meant to be a duty.
Yeah,
red dot. So there are some red dots that are meant for.
Yeah, I'm listing off red dots here. Holosun, I've seen those crack and break, especially on the internet. I've seen the lens break on those a lot. But once again,
you can break anything.
People in the industry breaking things is very different than like your average take a gun home, shoot it at the range, and put it in the safe person.
Most people are terrified to put a scratch on their gun, let alone do anything that would cause the red dot to break or crack. I think the biggest reason why people should go to red dot is because of the target focused.
It's a great feeling. I'm gonna give you this. Target focus
is so frustrating.
Yes,
having to focus on a front sight. I'm not shooting the front sight. Why am I focusing on it?
Yeah,
and it's shooting a target down range. Now I have to aim something in focus at something that I'm trying to kill, shoot, or destroy that's out of focus.
The weird thing about, I'll give you this, the weird thing about shooting iron sights is optical focus should be on your front sight, but mental focus should be toggling between your front sight and the target. There's a lot that's happening, but I also think that it's important to learn to do that.
And that's why, then the next thing I said is that it's a more precise aiming system.
No argument there. There's not.
Try going to shoot a target the size of an iPad at 50 yards with irons.
It can be done.
Your irons can be done.
Yeah.
But you're going to hit it 100 times more with a red dot on your gun than you are irons.
At least 100% more. Yeah. I agree.
Because again, your target focus. You have a tiny little red dot on it. All right. So the other thing that you're talking about is power. I think, you know, yes, the iron sights aren't going to die on you unless they fall off, or you have night sights that suck, and then you can't see your night sights.
Yeah.
Which again, one of the reasons why I said you should have a red dot is because you have illuminated dot at night, which is great. But power these days on red dots are crazy. I mean, they're lasting years.
Power, yeah, it's getting better.
I still change the battery once a year, and maybe that's just because I'm old school when it comes to red dots. I change my battery once a year, but to me, that's just not that big of a deal to make sure that my red dot's going to be good. There have been red dots that have been released even still over the last couple of years that have had horrible battery life.
Yeah.
But for the most part, there's technology in red dots that just makes that tiny little itty-bitty LED emitter just lasts forever
a very long time. Yeah.
So, as long as you're maintaining your red dot.
Yeah, that's the key right there.
Maintenance.
Yeah.
And same thing goes with your iron sights too.
You gotta like blow them off.
Check them, make sure that everything's tight and everything's that you know your back sight hasn't walked or something.
Which I have had happen to a sight that I put on. I put it on incorrectly.
Frankly, I think people that are anti-red dot because of all these things that don't happen with iron sights, they do happen with iron sights.
If you don't maintain them.
If you don't maintain them.
Yeah,
if you maintain your red dot, you maintain your iron sights, they're going to work all the time for you.
Yeah, and they will, so long as you're maintaining them. I think for safe, like a lot of people will buy guns and then just some reason leave them in your safe. I don't think you should have a red dot on that gun. If you're just gonna put it in your safe and leave it there for years,
I want to.
Well, you can. I just don't think you should.
People can do what they want. This is a whole
show about opinions.
What, are you going to start going into people's safes and saying, hey, you got a red dot on that gun?
Yeah, you should take that gun off. Yeah. At least put it on a gun you're going to utilize. I just think, you're looking for, long-term use. World War, whatever, 3 or apocalypse from the zombies kicks in. It's going to really suck when you've got that gun. It's been sitting in your safe for 2 years and it doesn't work because...
Maintain all your guns.
Yeah, maintain your guns. Greg said it right.
And one of the other kind of newer technologies that we're seeing, it's funny, it's old technology in rifle, but it's new technology, the pistol, which is a completely enclosed emitter.
Oh,
is something new. Because I was waiting for you to say one of the downsides of a red dot is shooting in the rain.
Yep.
With an emitter that's not closed. Yes. Like we used to do in the old days, it was cool to take your handgun and submerge it in a puddle or something.
Dunk it in the puddle, bring it up and shoot
pull it.
It
out and shoot it and
watch the water.
Yeah.
Well,
that
was cool. Those were sweet videos.
Well, we stopped doing that because of red dots.
Mm.
We don't want to fill our emitter with.
There's another con of red dots.
With crud, but closed emitter, red dots. I would be fine putting.
Bring back the submerged gunshots.
We need to bring this back.
Yeah, dunk it, shoot it. That's what I want to see. That's all I want my Instagram feed to be.
Yes.
Slow motion.
Slow motion of the handgun.
The slower the better.
And then just water and mist.
Just
it's. It was super cool back in the day.
I loved it, dude. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. All right, so do you have anything else you want to add to this?
I mean, honestly, I really kind of want to know what people think at home because I do think there's arguments to be made for both sides. I know that red dots have some serious capability improvements once you have started to be fundamentally solid in shooting because of the ability just to look where you're shooting and not having to mentally swap tasks. But I also think that it's really important for people to learn to shoot iron sights before they start with red dots, because I think that it truly helps your fundamentals when it comes to shooting.
I would love to hear, for those of you who are strictly anti-red dot, I would love to hear from you why you have no interest in red dot, will not be going to red dot, even after hearing my compelling argument for why you should have a red dot. Let me know why you're going to go red dot. If you're going to tell me that red dots are dumb and you'll never use one, but you've never used one before.
Oh, yeah.
Just
don't even open your mouth.
Yeah.
Nope.
Save the keystrokes.
I don't want to see any of those people down there.
Instead of the time with keystrokes, go talk to your buddy that has a red dot. Go learn how to use it and shoot it. So now's the fun part where we get to pick out what we're going to do next week. All right. So I got a few options here for you.
All right.
I got three here. Let me know which one you like the best. First one, best animal for drug testing.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it's bunny, squirrel, dog, I don't know.
It's a rat. Hands down, it's a rat.
Oh, they're too small.
There's no argument here.
Fine, all right.
It's a rat.
Chicken or egg? Which came first?
How am I supposed to know that?
I don't think that's why we're supposed to.
No way.
Right. How about on-body versus off-body carry?
Oh, like with firearms.
Yeah, like you're going to carry in a bag, in a purse, versus being on you. I feel like this is a topic that we hear.
We can do that one.
We'll do that one.
I think reasonably you should be able to carry off-body at times, so.
I think that's a horrible decision.
What do you
mean? Always have control of your firearm on you at all times, unless if you're not, then lock it up.
Well, control is totally different than, having it directly on your body. I'm in control of this glass. It's not on my body.
Because you're holding it.
I smack you if you're trying to get my glass.
If you put the glass.
That's not.
Over
no,
there.
That's too far away. It needs to be within arm's reach.
It's not control. Somebody else is going to break it.
All right. Stop it.
No,
I'll punch you. You better not.
I'm moving it away from the edge. You psycho.
See? I got control. It's no problem.
Next week, on body versus off body carry. I think this one's going to be hotly contested. Maybe come to blows.
No.
I'm waiting to break a bottle over the desk. I've always wanted to do that.
Nah, dude, I have to.
So
I'll get a pool cue and we can fight each other.
Awesome.
Yeah, okay.
All right, come back next week for a weird discussion than maybe a fight at the end.
It's probably not. I mean, likely. Well, it depends on how much this we drink, too. Yes. But long story short, we need you to like and subscribe because we're trying to grow our channel and we like you. So you should like us.
We also want to hear ideas. Let us know what you would think would be a good subject. It doesn't even have to be firearm related. We're going to start getting outside of firearm stuff in the kind of near future here. So let us know things that you think the internet needs a debate on.
Absolutely.
And you guys let us know which way to go. All right, you guys have a good one.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That's like saying somebody who drives their automatic car is a great race car driver. It's not going to happen.
All the greatest race car drivers drive automatics.
I mean, but they all know how to drive manuals.
Do they?
They absolutely do.
I don't know that.
I do.
You know every single race car driver.
I've talked to every race car driver in the world, and they all know how to drive manual.
I don't think any of them are driving manual anymore. I do love manual.
Yeah.
I do love
manual. There's a sweet spot in my heart for that.
There's something about driving manual. That's
something about redlining a car, and knowing that if you just continue to do that, the engine is going to go through the roof. And
would you see, I don't know if it's Tesla, but like one of the electric car companies is coming out with a manual. Like there's no pedal.
Yeah.
But they're coming out with like a shifting.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I think Porsche has one that has two speeds manual gearbox.
Two speeds.
Yeah, isn't that hilarious? Yep.
There you go.
It goes. That's the car's future there.
It terrifies me to think how fast.
They're already wicked fast.
With gears.
Yeah. Because now they can focus on a torque range.
I'm not sure how that happens. Because isn't the electric motor directly attached to the wheel?
I don't think so. Some of them are. Some of them are wheel driven, but others are like drivetrain driven, like your engine would be. I don't know. There's got to be clutch plates or something. Who knows? But
seems to be moving backwards from the intent of the technology, which is to simplify the car. But it's just like vegans that want bacon.
Right? Oh.
So you buy like vegan bacon.
But they want it made from plants?
It's the same thing. You have somebody who doesn't want a car but does want a car.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Listen, if you're a vegan who likes vegan bacon, click that unsubscribe button. Thank you.
And if you think that putting what was the word you said? If you think that putting clutch plates on a electric car is a good idea, go ahead and hit the unsubscribe button.
That's right. Just leave. We don't want to see you anymore.
Yeah, we've
spent too much time with you already.
Your opinion means nothing to us.
Man, we probably should wrap this up.
All right. I think we probably did minutes ago.
Yeah, you probably already edited all this out.
From my stats, 6% of people are still here.
That's fine with me.
Thank you,
for
six.
For those six.
That's about six of you.
Give them a little clink. And also, thanks, Last Cut Crystal, because... Yeah. I really like these glasses.
Thanks, Aaron.